Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and this week I'm pleased to have Dr. Robert Morse. He's a cardiologist in Seaside and Astoria, and Paulette McCoy,
Public Affairs and Marketing.
Thank you, at Providence Seaside. Welcome both.
Morning.
Thank you for having us, Ann.
Yeah, well, glad to have you back. Okay, so let's talk about, there's a new test that is a calcium scoring screening test that's new on the horizon, and I don't think very many people have heard of it. So, because I hadn't heard of it, and I read all the stuff that comes
out. You're up on all that stuff.
Well, not, I mean, when there's a new test, eventually it gets around to everybody that might order it.
Sure.
Well, I would say it's new perhaps to this area, but it's actually something that's been around for perhaps 20 or 30 years in one capacity or another. The original tests on coronary calcium were done with a older CT technology called EBCT, electron beam CT, which set the basis for our current utilization of coronary calcium as a preventive health tool for cardiovascular patients. In the current way that we use it here in Seaside, it's using a traditional CT scan with additional software and an additional workstation to allow us to use one of the things that CT does very good is discerning density differences in tissue and summing up all of the calcium densities that are found around the coronary arteries, and those are factored into a score which is highly correlated with your relative risk at whatever age you are at. So the why it's important as a tool is, of course, cardiovascular disease remains the number one killer of Americans and the number one killer of people in most developed countries because of all of the risk factors that accumulate and dietary changes, et cetera. So if you look at our traditional screening methodology is the Framingham risk score. So you would take the person's age and you would take blood pressure and their cholesterol readings and whether they smoke, whether they're diabetic, and you have a score. Well, unfortunately, using that alone, you're about 40% of people come out in an intermediate risk. And when you're intermediate risk, no one has traditionally known quite what to do with that. If you're high risk, which about 40% of people are, leaving about, I think, 20% come out low risk. So if you're high risk, we know exactly what to do with you. You get treated with aggressive lipid lowering. If you're diabetic, that's all tuned up. If you've got high blood pressure, that's all tuned up. If you're low risk, of course, you're low risk, and you traditionally would not need anything else to do other than continue to eat healthy, exercise, take good care of yourself. It's that intermediate risk category that we've struggled with for many years. And those are the population of patients that most of us as preventive cardiologists have felt that if we just had a tool or a technique that we could better identify who within that intermediate risk group are high risk and who are truly perhaps low risk by virtue of genetics or other factors. And so people have looked at different ways of discerning who within that intermediate risk population would be better served by more aggressive risk modification. And so traditionally, what have we done with those people? Well, there was a time when we used to do stress tests on people. Stress testing, we've come to find out, is not very useful in that setting because to be identified as high risk by a stress test, you typically have to have a fairly high-grade blockage in one of your arteries. And the blockages that cause heart attacks, interestingly enough, are not the necessarily high-grade, greater than 70% blockages. They're the 50% blockages. So a stress test can be entirely normal, and you can have a heart attack the next day. And we've heard this again and again.
Right. Everybody knows someone.
And everybody goes, well, how did that happen? Well, it happened because the person had a plaque rupture of a 40 to 50% blockage in their artery that would not have been detected by a stress test.
So are stress tests not used?
For asymptomatic patients, it's really...
For asymptomatic patients.
Asymptomatic patient.
Okay. So let's back up and talk about what kind of symptoms might bring someone to you that might result in your doing this test.
Well, in most instances, this particular test is for that primary prevention, asymptomatic group of patients.
Except this says, okay, on WebMD, it says the screening is not for you, and obviously this is for a lay market. This screening test is not for you if you don't have any risk factors or if you're at high risk because you're already under somebody's care.
Right. So risk is not necessarily a symptom. Risk is, do you have high blood pressure? Are you a diabetic? Do you have high cholesterol? Are you a smoker? Those are your risk factors, what age you are. Mm-hmm. What they're referring to is your Framingham risk. So those are not symptoms like a chest pain. There have been some situations where this test has been used in the emergency room to discern who should go home with chest pain and who should be further evaluated. Mm-hmm. But that really hasn't played out to the extent that it's really strongly recommended. So its biggest utilization at this point is primary prevention, no symptoms, intermediate risk by the Framingham risk scoring system, because you're correct. If you're high risk, this test has no value to you. What you want to use this test for, because it does involve getting radiation, it does involve some cost, you want to make it a valuable thing for the patient to find something out that you don't have any other way of finding out. And it's oftentimes referred to as the tip of the iceberg type of test. The coronary calcium score can highlight a person's risk in a way that the Framingham risk score has fallen short and identify people that, left to their own devices, so to speak, would likely have an event at some point down the road. And if you have this information, you can perhaps save a life and prevent a heart attack down the road.
Let's go back to that Framingham survey. When does somebody get that?
Well, what I have recommended to the primary care doctors that I work with is essentially any adult patient that you see, perhaps over the age of 40 if you're a man, perhaps a little bit older for women, because women do have some protective benefits until they go through menopause. But that you start at about age 40, 45, somewhere in there, calculating person's risk and determining whether or not they have a high enough risk to warrant an intervention to try to lower their risk. And mostly what it comes down to is whether you give people cholesterol-lowering treatments is the main tool. I mean, things like, well, you need to quit smoking and that will lower your risk. That's relatively easy. If you're diabetic.
Well, it's easy to say.
It's easy to say.
For the person who's addicted.
Yeah,
right.
But mostly what this has to do with, our main tool in our armamentarium at this point is cholesterol-lowering treatments. Statin cholesterol medications have tremendous benefit at lowering risk, but we can't just put it in the water and give it to everybody because there is some risk with the use of the medicine. So again, you want to use that medication as powerful as it is in its best utilization, which is a higher risk population.
It's except that's not really how it's being used. Internists are using it like candy. Everyone,
especially, you mean cholesterol medicine?
Yeah. You know, everybody needs to be on it. It's the feeling that I get, you know, as a health professional. Everybody that comes to me is on it.
I have seen situations where many patients, so the flip side of this is many patients are put on a statin for the feeling that their risk was high. And when you actually calculate the risk, it's not high, even if you use their baseline data, which is why it's important to, you know, do the math a little bit in some situations. Perceived risk and risk based on the numbers is different. But yes, so they're put on a medication and then, of course, they get sore, achy muscles and they go from this one to that one. And by the time they make it to me, they've been on four or five, you know, they're the 45-year-old premenopausal woman who's been told that she has to take this cholesterol medication because her dad may have had bypass surgery, and there's this perception that she's at significantly increased risk and she's just suffering because of all the side effects of this medication. That, oh, do I really, really, really have to take this? And, well, you fit into this class of, yeah, perhaps your risk is high enough that it doesn't warrant this, but this is a way for us to find out. And in that situation, the negative predictive capability of a coronary calcium score, so if that woman who is suffering with the side effects of statins has a zero calcium score, her risk is so low that you can very comfortably tell her, you know what, you really don't need to take a statin at this point. You should eat healthy, watch your weight, exercise on a regular basis. But at this point, there's no real value to you in continuing to try to suffer with this mm-hmm. class of medicine.
So even though there's an increased risk because there's radiation involved, if you could say for sure you have a low enough risk that it's not necessary, that would certainly be a benefit.
And that's been looked at, the risk of radiation, because it's a gated study. So the radiation is pulsed. It's actually lower than a traditional CAT scan of your chest, the amount of radiation that you receive. And when it's been looked at in terms of downstream risk as to the need for additional testing, the cost involved in the care of that patient for follow-up on unexpected findings like solitary pulmonary nodules and those sorts of things that are also looked at on the scan. The end result was that there isn't a lot of downstream excessive risk to the patient. Mm-hmm. And in the right situation, you are perhaps saving. You're using the technology in an effective way mm-hmm. to decrease the cost, because that particular person is looking at spending what amount of money every year on blood tests to follow up their cholesterol medication, the cost of the medicine itself, the doctor visits because they're having sore, achy muscles. Mm-hmm. And that's a relatively small niche of the patients that would benefit from this. Again, you're mostly wanting to find people that have high calcium scores that you wouldn't have expected, and then really mm-hmm. focusing on aggressive risk prevention, which includes cholesterol medicine, but also includes what I found is when a patient is shown this information, and one way of looking at this that I've always favored in the literature, people talk about your coronary age, your coronary vessel age. And so the scales and the tables that are used to determine the relative risk for patients is actually by age. And so I'm 53 years old at this point. If I have a calcium score today, there's a number that, based on that, would put me at the 50th percentile for 53-year-old men. If I'm above that, then I'm at significantly increased risk. If I'm below that, great. If my score is at the 50th percentile for somebody who's 75 years old, then essentially one way of looking at it is my coronary arteries are 75 years old, even though I'm 53-year-old chronologically, mm-hmm. and that's very mm-hmm. powerful. To explain that to a patient, and very motivating for them to make significant life changes. And so that's one of the other sort of ancillary benefits of this particular test, at illuminating mm-hmm. in a way that you can talk till the cows come home sometimes. And when you show somebody something and explain to them in a way, it many times is like, oh my God, I really have to make changes, which can include, yes, taking a cholesterol medicine, but it can also include, oh, I really got to lose weight. I've got to start exercising. I've got to get my 10,000 steps in. I've got to eat healthier. I'm not going to go to eat fast food anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it has a lot of ancillary offshoots.
What I've noticed is people will have, something will happen, and it's usually not this, because I haven't ever met anyone who's had this calcium screen, but they have a heart attack, and maybe they have a bypass, maybe they have a multi-bypass, or they have this major, major life-changing event, and they quit smoking, and they improve their eating for about 3 to 5 months. And then it's like, oh, I didn't die. Okay. I think I'll start smoking again. Oh, I think I'll start eating crap again. And I think,
it's short-lived, yeah.
Yeah.
Like a diet. You go mm-hmm. on it for a while.
Right. You know, they are exercising great for a few months, and mm-hmm. then they're bad. Let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk about how to keep people motivated. My guests are Dr. Robert Morse, who's a cardiologist in Astoria and Seaside, and Paulette McCoy, who's the marketing
public affairs.
Public affairs person at Seaside Providence. We'll be right back. If you have a question for either of my guests, you can give a call here at 503-325-0010. You're listening to To Your Health. Well, we're back. You are listening to Your Health. That was some solo bass. And we're talking about calcium screening scoring. And so, well, actually, before we talk about the actual test, I want to talk about how do you keep people doing what's better for them as opposed to what they might want to do, which is, you know, eat crummy, sit on the couch and watch TV, and smoke. Even though, I mean, the percent of people smoking has really, it continues to go down. Right. But still, I mean, yesterday I was here recording and everybody I was recording was smoking. And I had, wow, I had to tell them, and they, teenagers, yeah, and I had to tell them that they couldn't come in here smoking.
Well, absolutely not, especially in this little historic building.
Yeah. There's, I mean, not that people ever think about smoking inside, but so what do you do?
Well, I try to lead by example, so I've always felt it was important for myself to not be heavy and eat healthy. And when people see me I'm out walking around here on the Riverwalk or down on the beach down in Gearhart, and I make a conversation with patients that I, in fact, by the use of this test, actually, about 10 years ago, found out that I have a significantly elevated coronary calcium score, and which was unexpected. I take cholesterol medicine now, and as I've gotten older, I've had to watch my weight and try to eat healthy. So I more or less engage in patients that this is what I'm doing. These are the things that are helpful to do. And it's an ongoing process where each visit I ask them how they're doing with walking. How active have you been? Have you thought about getting a pedometer to monitor your steps, which is something that I recently did over Christmas this year. My wife and I decided to get the Fitbit so that we could track our walking and make sure we're getting our 10,000 steps. And so that's something that can be motivating. But it's an ongoing process, and it's just more or less explaining to patients each and every visit the importance of these things like eating healthy and walking and things that you wouldn't necessarily think are as important as a medication, but they are. They may actually be more important.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. Although,
and the other thing is, if you have somebody doing it with you, like Dr. Moore says, he and his wife do it, and they have it on, you know, is it a phone app? Because I know you can get the phone apps too to mark your steps.
Oh.
I have that on mine, which is really, really cool.
How neat.
Yeah, it's a GPS little Nike thing on my phone. But also, if you have your family with you doing it, it's like, you know, if you're trying to quit smoking and the other person in your house is smoking, I mean, that's really tough. So if you have somebody that's really motivated,
right,
then you get your partner or a girlfriend or boyfriend to do it with you, then you may
right,
continue.
Well, and the same thing with diet.
Yeah.
If we're making an agreement that we're going to eat more fruits and vegetables,
right,
we're going to be shopping differently.
And
we're
if everyone in your household is
very
behind you.
Yeah,
it is.
Right.
Very
say, no, I'm only eating meat and potatoes. You go, well,
right, that's tough.
Yeah.
And I have that sometimes. And the patients that have that seriously, it's increasingly difficult for them to quit smoking. If you have another smoker in the house that doesn't want to quit, it makes it almost impossible for them.
Right. It may be certainly difficult. All right. So let's talk about what happens when you go in for this test. Where are you? Are you in the hospital? Is it outpatient procedure?
This test is performed over at Providence Seaside Hospital in the radiology department, and it uses the standard 32-slice CT scanner that is in most institutions. What is needed to do this particular test is additional software and a workstation. Mm-hmm. To do the computer, essentially, analysis of a very confined section where the heart is, pluck out the areas of calcium and do a computer calculation of the relative density of those, which gives the actual calcium score. Mm-hmm. And then the radiologist also, of course, looks at all of the lung fields, and occasionally there are other findings that mm-hmm. Come out as a result of this that are worthwhile.
How long does it take? Is it like another CAT scan? Like it takes 4 minutes?
It takes, probably less than 5 minutes on average.
Right.
It's a very quick test. This mm-hmm. one is computer gated, so to your heart, so that you don't get as much radiation as a traditional mm-hmm. CT scan. But it's a very quick test.
Is there any prep? No.
There is no prep.
So you don't have to fast, and you don't have to have it. Have a laxative.
You don't have
to drink 2 gallons of water.
You have to not have a really fast heart rate. So patients who are in atrial fibrillation can sometimes be problematic, and their heart has to be slowed down, mostly because of the gating process for this scan. If your heart is a little rapid and irregular, the gating will be difficult, and every once in a while they... I've been called on ones where they just say, we should just do this one on a different day when you've got his heart rate slowed down a little bit more. But beyond that, there
is not invasive. So there's no dyes.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's no injections.
No injection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so then the radiologist actually does the scoring, or you do the scoring?
Scoring is actually done by software.
Oh, okay.
So scoring is just a computer software mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. The radiology tech actually goes through, and in conjunction with the radiologist and the software, they put together a report that gives you your score referenced to these age-based guidelines. And so the report will tell you where you sit compared to similar aged people mm-hmm. Based on these established protocols that have been done in the past.
That sounds cool. And so you get a number that looks like, is it like a 1 to 10 scale? Is it that kind of, or is it it's a percentile?
No, it's a hard number, like 1 or 10 or whatever it may be. It's going to be a number. Mm-hmm. And so you start off with 0. I mean, if you do it on lower risk people, younger people, it's going to be 0. As you go from being in your 40s to 50s to 60s, is probably the biggest group of patients that are going to derive a benefit up to about age 65. After that, most people in that age category, their risk is going to have been defined by other means. And so the biggest group is going to be that 45 to 65. But it's going to be a hard number. Over 400 is a really high number and probably indicative of fairly potentially severe coronary disease. If you're over the 50th percentile for your age, you're at increased risk. And if you're below that, you're either at your anticipated risk level or you're below it. Mm-hmm. You're considered very low risk.
Is this a procedure that people's insurance, like Medicare, Blue Cross, pays for?
Typically not, because it's considered a screening test. And so the difficulty...
They'd rather spend more later.
Yeah,
dealing with the heart attack.
Exactly.
And the bypass.
But it fits into the category. There's only been a few screening tests that have ever been, like mammograms have been approved
and pap
for
smear.
Screening,
right.
And colonoscopy have been approved for screening. But for whatever reason, and maybe that will change mm-hmm. as we become more focused on, or we should be becoming more focused on prevention.
Oh, yeah, that's what that's what health care should be.
Right.
It's not disease care.
But the cost of this is significantly lower than a regular CAT scan. Uh-huh. We really have.
So how much is it?
What we were able to do is negotiate a price of about $150, which is very competitive throughout the U.S. for this test.
That's surprisingly low.
It is.
That's
it
great. Is. So it that would is. Be a motivator, even if you had to pay it out of pocket, which
right.
it sounds like you would. It's something that's within the grasp of the person that would need it, which would be someone who's 45 to 60 who doesn't know, you know, or maybe they have some risk factors. They may have high blood pressure mm-hmm. or they may have high cholesterol.
Or the family history.
What we were shooting for is to make this as affordable as like a Lifeline screening. It's in that realm mm-hmm. of screening tests that the average person can afford. It has to be affordable or many people aren't going
now,
to do it.
If people like call up and say, well, I want to have this test because it sounds cool and I'm, you know, like I'm 35, and say, no, come back in 10 years.
What we've done is, in the way we marketed this, was pointing out that the test is meant for people at a certain age and risk category.
Yeah, we said 50.
I don't think we've really
older.
Excluded anybody, but the people that I have, I get the reports on all the ones that we do from a screening standpoint, and then generate information for the patient after the fact about what the findings were, and there really haven't been any. If anything, there was a few people over the age of 65 that might not have really truly needed it, but that if anything, that's where there was a few people
extra.
That I would have probably told them, it's probably not the right test for you.
Mm-hmm. Not necessary.
Right.
Because we already know. Right. We already know your risk.
But there's our, of the ones that were done during the month of February, during Heart Month, there was at least one that very clearly, young man, 43 years old. His father died at age 48 from a massive coronary. His mother had already had bypass by the time she was 60, and he had exceedingly high calcium score. And I'm very confident that we probably saved his life by
well,
him
right,
having this
test. Well,
right,
you hear about those people
yes.
with those family risks, and they're like, "I'm a waiting time bomb, and I mm-hmm. don't know what to do." And I'm, you know, so I'm doing everything. Either I give up and I'll do anything. I'll do nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll just do whatever I feel like doing. Or I'm very conscientious and I'm running every day and I'm you know, only eating fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. I'm now a vegetarian or whatever. And maybe that's not enough.
For some people, it isn't enough. And even with this test, we're not going to prevent every heart attack. The hope is, within that group of intermediate risk patients, that we can pluck out some amount, mm-hmm. and any heart attack prevented is a huge. It's huge for the patient because 15% of people die before they get to the hospital, and then another 15%, even with all of the great things that we have to do for people that come in with heart attacks. Nationally, about 15% of people still die as a result of their heart attack or the consequences of it with a weakened heart muscle.
So that's 30%.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
So even one of those prevented is a huge savings to the person, to the cost of health care in the United States.
Right. And also, I mean, premature mortality is a big drain on everything. Whatever those skills that person has disappears.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's amazing. Well, we've come to the end of our time. Thank you very much. This has been really enlightening for me.
Thank you, Anne,
yeah.
for having us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yes. We'll have to have a regroup. I'd love to see like longevity, you know, what happens over time, trends that are happening in cardiology we can catch mm-hmm. up on.
Sure.
Great. My guests have been Dr. Robert Morse. He's a cardiologist at Seaside and Astoria Providence. And Paulette McCoy, who's a marketing...
Public affairs. Oh, and Dr. Morris also sees patients in Wheeler for our friends in North Tillamook County.
Oh, yes. That's great. Well, we have lots of listeners
down
there.
Yes, we
Thank
do.
Thank you. That's
yes.
good.
Yeah.
And you've been here for 2 years now. That's great. Next week, Michael Pierce will be here. We'll be talking about growing hemp commercially. Have a great week.